Okay, welcome back to the DU Allyship podcast. This is Anna.
And I'm Julie, and today we're going to be interviewing Dr. Travis Heath. Can you introduce yourself and your credentials? Or like more about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Like you want like academic kinds of credentials?
Yeah,
or?
Sure. Or like what you do at the university too.
Yeah, so I am a licensed psychologist, and I have been also in academia now for, 2021? So I guess 13 years now, going on 13 years. And I have taught for the previous 12 years at Metro State University, just up the road from DU in Denver. And then I came over this year to DU for 1 year on a kind of visiting position to work with the Graduate School of Professional Psychology. So I'm directing the Trauma, Disaster, and Recovery Clinic there, and I'm also doing some diversity, equity, and inclusion work. And and it looks like I'm gonna stay on at DU, so looks like I'll be here now in the future as well, which is cool. But new to DU, so showed up in, well, I mean, I have colleagues and friends and things that work at DU, so it's, you know, I grew up in Denver, so it's not like I don't know DU, but new to kind of existing in the ecosystem of DU, right? I don't know what else would be interesting. I could tell you other stuff if you're in, but that's kind of my job professional sort of bio.
Can we also get your name?
Your full
that
time.
Would be good.
Yeah.
So my name's Travis. First name's Travis, my last name's Heath. You could call me Dr. Travis Heath if you want to, but I often just go by Travis, but I guess the formalized academic title is Dr. Travis Heath.
Okie dokie. So the first question we have for you is, what is the Black Lives Matters movement?
Yeah. See, I don't know. I don't know if I, have the authority to say what it is, right? I think it's a lot of different things. But I'll tell you my best understanding of it. A liberation movement, a justice movement that centers Black life, right? That centers Black creativity, that centers Black joy, right? And I also think, when I think of BLM, an organization that stands against white supremacy, right, in all of its forms. And when we talk about supporting Black life, I mean, supporting the life of Black women, supporting the life of Black trans folks, right? Like, those most marginalized within the Black community. So that would be my best attempt. Now, one of the cool things I think about the Black Lives Matter movement is that it's taken off kind of in the ways it needs to in different contexts and in different cities, right? And to kind of meet the moment, whatever's happening, currently. And so that's one of the things I admire about BLM is the way in which it, can meet the moment. And I think that takes a bit of adaptability and flexibility, right? Depending on whatever is happening. But that's kind of my mission. That's what I say.
Do you think DU acted appropriately in response to this movement?
Well, that's an interesting question. Tell me more what you mean, like acted appropriately with regard to what?
I'm just going to start off at like the beginning, but like the reason why we're talking about this movement is because it's the most recent movement, and it has had a lot of impact on the students themselves. And so a lot of students have spoken out about their experiences with DU being the lacking diversity, how they should have reacted and accommodated students during the Black Lives Matter movement. And so there were some actions that DU took, such as accommodating students, like pushing finals or telling professors to be more flexible with assignments for students during the Black Lives Matter movement. And we're just wondering if that was the appropriate call for DU to have done, or if they could have done more.
Mm. Yeah, see, it's interesting because to me, BLM was going before last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And it continues now, right? So the movement is still moving. And I think that corporations, institutions, groups, you know, I don't know that their response is done. And see, I guess, like, when I think about the university, and I'll get to DU, but let me start more broadly with just universities as a whole, right? I'm not sure universities know exactly what to do with Black Lives Matter. And what I mean by that is, you know, universities have really started focusing on diversity, right? And diversity is fine, it's worthwhile. Or even like the title now, and it's in one of my professional titles, diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know? Like, to diversify isn't enough if we don't transform the institution, right? Because what I'm saying is, if DU or any other university makes an effort to hire Black scholars or scholars of color, and then continues to kind of demand that its employees perform whiteness, if you will, right? Then what good is the diversity? Because the diversity then is essentially being asked to behave the same way that folks have always behaved in the academy. And like, so when I think about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, the diversity part is fine, but it's not an end in itself, right? The equity part, well, okay, yes, I'm for equity. There's a lot of conversations we could have around that. But then the inclusion part, I prefer the word transformation. Like, I feel like, you know, I don't want to be included in a system that wasn't made for me. That doesn't make a lot of sense. What I want is the system to begin to transform so there can be space for us, space for Black life, space for Black creativity, Black joy, et cetera, right? And that's the part that I don't think universities, and that universities aren't alone, corporations, groups, really know what to do with. You know, like last summer, I think it was it's 2021 now, so summer of 2020, like, I heard everybody talking about anti-racism, you know, anti-racist this and anti-racist that. And I, like, people caught wind of that phrase and they started using it, but I'm not sure they understood what it really meant in terms of its implementation, right? And so you're asking me, like, what DU's done, and I feel like DU has a lot of work to do still on that front. Now, I don't think they're alone. The institution I came from, Metro State University, a state school, has a lot of work to do on that front. You know, I mean, when we're looking at like senior administration and it's almost all white, you know, across many, many universities, we haven't even gotten to the diversity part, let alone the part about how we begin to transform systems. And so, like, some of the things you were mentioning, you know, like trying to accommodate students in terms of allowing them flexibility in different ways, I think that's a good thing no matter what, most especially in a COVID world and with everything that's been happening in terms of racism in the United States. Of course, see, that's the interesting thing about racism is, like, in this country, some people think that this sort of started a year ago. Some people think it started about 4 years ago, right? When in reality, we're talking about 400 years of this. And so to ask an institution like DU to sort of fundamentally change outside of the nation as a whole changing is a really big ask. Now, it's something I think that we should be doing. And DU's, you know, they've got like DEI strategic plans, and I think they're moving in some directions that, you know, can be positive. But racism, the way that I look at it and understand it, is not an individual attitude, right? Racism is something that's infrastructural. It exists in the infrastructure. It's systemic, right? And so the way we fight this, in my opinion, is not by trying to change individual attitudes or change individual hearts and minds, right? I'm not so interested in that. I'm more interested in, like, land, labor, and resources. How are we distributing and redistributing resources, right? What sort of labor is being done, and how are those labor practices established, and how do they move towards equity? So to me, like, when I look at DU, to get to circle all the way back to your question, we have a lot of work in front of us in doing that. And, you know, a lot of the work I've done, scholarship I've been involved with, is looking at, like, decolonial practices. So how do we decolonize, like, my field, psychology and psychotherapy? And then we could start talking about how do we decolonize the university. But that's a tricky question, because the university is inherently a colonial structure. Like, and if the university is a colonial structure, can it be decolonized? I don't know that it can completely. Now, that said, maybe we can create decolonial pockets or some decolonial momentum. And so to me, it's not an all or nothing. Like, it's worthwhile to fight for our minoritized students and our minoritized staff and faculty to create some of these spaces. But I don't know if people smarter than me will have to answer this. Can an institution that is at its heart a colonial institution, can it be completely decolonized? Like, I don't know. I have my doubts about that. But also, I don't think that means we shouldn't try. You know, I think there's still value to be gained in trying. So that's a really long answer. If I didn't get at the heart of your question, please tell me. But the reason for me it's a long answer is just because there are so many moving parts. And like, one of the things that I worry about is that we look at this too simplistically, right? Like, an event happens, the administration of any university or corporation or business or whatever releases a statement. And the statement could be with the best of intentions, but then it's like, that's kind of it. What's the action we're taking that's in alignment with that statement? What are the short-term actions and the long-term actions? I understand that people in charge or in relative positions of power are in a bit of a catch-22, because if you don't release a statement, it's assumed you don't care. But also, when you do release statements, sometimes it comes off as a bit hollow. But if we're going to release statements, then we have to have practices within our institution that enact the values of that statement, right? Otherwise, it just becomes hollow rhetoric. And so in that way, we have a lot of work to do. I think we're doing some of it. There's much more to be done. And DU is not alone in terms of higher education.
I think you actually answered this question and the next question we have with your answers. Very thoughtful and really thought-provoking. Do you have any more questions for Travis?
No, I just really agreed with him. DU had good intentions when it came to accommodating students, but in the end, it wasn't enough. Like, I still had friends who said that they were even more thankful that the quarantine happened at the same time that the riots and the movement took momentum, because they honestly wouldn't have felt safe being on campus while this was going on. It was like a kind of a blessing in disguise having the quarantine. But there's still more to be done. And so I think like one more follow-up question would be, do you have any specific suggestions on how DU can be more inclusive, more diverse, more accommodating to students?
Yeah, I do. And I think, I will say some of what I'm about to talk about, the DEI office, the university DEI office is thinking about these things, and so I don't want to make it sound like this is something brand new or these are all my ideas or something, but the reason I want to talk about these few ideas is because this is what we've started doing in our unit in the Graduate School of Professional Psychology. We're just sort of in the early stages of this, but to give you some background, kind of what we did when I arrived in September, I talked to anyone that would talk to me, certainly faculty and staff, but most importantly, students and alumni, right, from our programs. And wanted to know kind of what they felt like we were doing well with regard to DEI, what we weren't doing well. I was actually most interested in that, where we could be better. And then, I asked everyone, like, if you had a magic wand of DEI, what would you do? Like, what policies would you put in place, right? And students and alums have a lot of great ideas, right, if we just listen to them. And so through those interviews, we've got a few working groups that are looking at some different things. So one, we're looking at, like, for faculty, kind of the tenure process, what the tenure process looks like, and what are the specific diversity, equity, inclusion objectives that faculty members need to meet in terms of their curriculum, in terms of their interactions with students, right? Making space for students to evaluate faculty on these, right? Like, are we, you evaluate faculty on any number of issues, right? But how are we doing it with DEI? And then if we can write some policy in our guidelines, then we can go, how are professors responding to the students' comments about DEI, right? So that's something I think is important. It needs to be a part of evaluating our job performance. We're also taking a look at how we recruit students, right? The interview process for students. Once students get here, you know, what are we doing to make sure minoritized students not just get through the program? Because see, the thing is, I talked to a lot of minoritized students who would, especially racially minoritized students, who got through the program, but it wasn't a great experience, right? It was like just something they had to put their head down and get through. And so we've got to ask ourselves, from the time we're recruiting students to the time that they graduate, what are we doing to, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, not just include, but to transform our spaces. And this is minoritized broadly defined. Of course, racially minoritized, but also what are we doing for trans students, right? To create trans-affirming environments, queer-affirming environments. How are we considering the ways in which our institution and programs might be ableist? And what's that doing, right? And so I think one of the things we want to do is really look at our processes. You know, do we have interview questions that are addressing this? And then how do we continue want students are in our programs, right, to actually follow through? Because otherwise it's hollow rhetoric, right? Now, just a couple of more. We have an LGBTQ plus subcommittee, right, that we formed, because we really need to be better, as I was just saying, in terms of queer and trans affirming. And so looking at that is important. You know, we're looking at our curriculum and our teaching practices, because too often curriculum is, you know, outdated, and or we're spending most of our time reading about the works produced by white men, which is not to say white men have nothing to contribute, but we really need to do, and we're in the process of trying to get a grant to do this, to do a curricular audit so we can diversify our syllabi. Because again, like in our program, if someone's training to be a psychologist or a psychotherapist in some way, and none of the works that they're reading in the class represent them, their communities, then essentially what we're doing is we're just reproducing like Eurocentric dominant practices, right? As opposed to thinking about how people will heal in various communities, of which there's lots written about and there's plenty of research, but just traditionally these things haven't been taught, right? So that's like one area where we definitely have to be better. And I'll give you one more. We're really thinking about like, how do we create structures of accountability? And what I mean by that is like, if, of course, for large transgressions, there's like a Title IX office, right? But my hope is that we can start addressing transgressions before they get large, you know? So like if some, like say a microaggression or something happens in a class, and a student needs to sort of talk about this and process this, who do they talk to, right? And then how long does it take for the process to evaluate what's happened? Like, does that take a week or does it take a month? How do we loop the faculty member back in? What are we doing with our faculty to educate faculty to make sure that this doesn't happen again, right? And then how do we bring the student back in? And so thinking about, because we really don't have processes for something like this. Of course, there are university processes for like big events that happen, right? Sexual harassment or something like this. But a lot of times there are smaller things that happen that are happening to our students and they accumulate over a period of years. And there's no way for, you know, students haven't felt safe communicating about it. And then we owe it as faculty to think about like how we're doing this and try to do it differently if it's harming students in some way. Because, you know, it adds up. It's kind of the death by a thousand paper cuts sort of thing, right? Like, you know, each one, although microaggressions are interesting because sometimes those of us on the receiving end, they're a bit more macro than they are micro. They're actually really big. It's just, you know, white folks or folks from dominant cultural identities may not see it, but we do and we feel it, right? And so how can we create some sort of collective accountability? Now, that's not all the work we'll do, but that gives you kind of an idea of like five working groups that we have. And my sort of my goal in bringing these up within GSPP is to start working to change structures, to change policies, rather than sitting down and trying to change hearts and minds. Because I don't think most folks here would say that they espouse racist ideology, right? It's not like an individual attitude, but it's just the way the system functions. And so what we're trying to do then is target certain elements of the system and see how we can change it through policy and through creating sort of counter structures to the structures that we've had and how they function. Now, again, I'm not trying to tell you that GSPP is really special or that other units aren't doing this. I mean, I just got to DU, but I know social work's considering a lot of these sorts of things. I know the university in its plan is trying to organize around some of these ideas, right? So again, I hope that folks listening don't think that it's like, oh, DU as a whole is doing nothing, but I just wanted to speak in specifics about, you know, what we're trying to do in our unit and maybe why we're trying to do it.
That's about all the questions we have for you.
Yeah.
Today. So thank you so much for agreeing to Great. Interview.
Well, thanks for having me on. It was fun speaking with you.
Yeah. Thank you, too.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the DU Allyship podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please email thedupodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you again next time.